Welcome to the Technori Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Joining me on today's show, Matt Pulley. He's the CTO of Home Chef, you know, tiny little food company that got acquired for, like $500 million by Kroger, and they are just crushing it. Number three on the Inc. list of fastest growing companies last year at 60,000% growth year over year, which is just insane. Looks like they're going to probably beat that this year because they're in about a thousand stores, and they'll be at about 2,000 stores across the country next year, or by the end of next year. And they've got, obviously, the app and homechef.com, which, if you haven't tried it, it's awesome. I don't know how to cook, and I don't know how to assemble anything to cook. So, for me, I'm like the target, I think. But also, just having a kid is also sort of like, you know, it's a great... Someone gifted it to me, and it was awesome because it was like unexpected, and all of a sudden, boom, there's like meals showing up at the door, and all you have to do is follow the directions. If you can read and follow directions, it's for you. So great conversation with Matt. Before we get to the interview, I'm going to check in with our Twitter poll, which is brought to you by ActiveCampaign. Go beyond email marketing with True Automation by signing up at activecampaign.com/technori. Get your first 2 months for free. The Twitter poll last week was a doozy. The question was, do you trust people who buy fake AirPods? Yes or no? This is surprising. 60% of people trust people who buy AirPods. 40% do not trust people who buy fake AirPods. I voted in the do not trust part. My wife voted for, I do trust people who buy fake AirPods because she buys fake AirPods. I don't get it. I don't understand people who buy fake AirPods. I don't get it. The whole concept is to have this like super amazing product that's seamless and works. And you could tell me the knockoffs are the same. You're an idiot. If you look at them, they look ridiculous. These things are like the size of a shoe inside of people's ears. And I'm sorry, I'm not putting some random tchotchke item on Amazon inside my head. I barely trust the item coming from Apple. I'm not doing that. But anyway, I thought it was really fascinating that it was like a 50-50 split, but there was a clear majority that were like, no, 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 if you don't buy real AirPods, I can't. I just can't do you. So anyway, fascinating Twitter poll. We'll push out another one this week, and we'll share it with you on the next episode. This is my conversation with the CTO of Home Chef, employee number, 15, Matt Pulley. So you came on to Home Chef as CTO like 4 or 5 years ago?
Yeah.
Okay.
About 4.5 years ago.
Okay.
It was less than 15. 14 or 15.
So you're kind of like quasi co-founder status there.
I mean, it was early.
Not there,
it
but like it's...
I like to say we were at the end of our MVP phase. So we knew we had a product market fit. We had... it was very MVP in terms of the processes and even what the website and everything looked like. And we just needed to kind of start taking it and scale from there.
So we're just rolling straight in. I think, so I've had Pat on the show a couple times. Pat's a good dude. And it's just like a weird, I have this weird world. I do not come from the food space or anything like that. I mean, it looks like because I continue to eat and get fat, but like I don't actually come from the food space. And like in the same week that I met Pat, it was relatively around the time that my buddy Peter Rahal exited with RX Bar to Kellogg for $600 million and change. And you guys weren't too far behind that. And then I got introduced to Luke from Farmer's Fridge, and he raised 45. And it was like, and then I had Tavalik, David Raby, he raises 20. And he's on the show, and Bartopian's in here. And like, it was like the same week. Chicago went from like, we're a food town, but like we're like a food tech town. Yeah. And people, it's the weirdest thing is I've talked to VCs and others and people who are unaware. And I'm telling you from my conversations with David Raby going way back to like, he's still at U of C, like carrying around this monstrosity of a machine on the bus. And he was like, I can't raise money for food in Chicago. And I'm like, that is, if you really think about that, like how insanely mind blowing that is, given that Chicago is a foodie town. And tech was like on the way up. You would have thought that's like the place that Chicago plants the flag. And yet we kind of avoided it and skipped it. And then fast forward 3 or 4 years and there's, you know, more than, I mean, those guys obviously haven't exited yet, but like there's $1 billion in exits between you guys and RX Bar. And there's probably another $1 billion in exits on the other side of Farmer's Fridge and Tavala, which, you know, has a new deal with LG. And so it's a crazy, Chicago's a hell of a good place to be for mm-hmm. tech, but it's even better in food tech, I think.
Yeah. I think what's interesting, what we're really excited about right now is just the, it's just like the right time to kind of take tech. So Tavala has the machine, and it's sort of like grocery and food is maybe one of the last frontiers in, yeah. in terms of getting there. So I think that's what we're seeing in the last couple of years, just even including the gig economy. You've got so we've had Grubhub here, but the Uber Eats and Postmates. So the expectation of being able to access food via your mobile device and get it near on demand just sort of normalizes customer expectations. And so now, that disrupts the traditional grocery and the traditional restaurant even. And so I think you're seeing that rise in tech in the food because of that.
I totally agree. This is a random aside on the way in today. I heard a stat that it was a little unsettling, but also like not surprising. 20% of food delivery drivers take a bite. Like take a French fry, or they take a sip out of your slushy, or whatever. Like, there's a video on a guy from DoorDash taking a sip out of somebody's shake, and that's like. And then
is
they
that one
like,
of those ring alarm doorbell cameras?
Probably, I hope so. Because
senior
like,
delivery
just gets
person
even
just
yeah.
eat your
the,
meal.
The, watching the delivery person in nature is basically like the modern day National Geographic. I feel like you get to watch real human beings when they don't think they're being watched.
I don't know if I want to watch those videos.
But it's funny to know.
Yeah, interesting thing. I read, maybe it was an NPR piece, but French fries apparently don't make the delivery trip very well. So there are literally people trying to solve this problem and create a French fry that makes the delivery without being soggy.
I'm sure they could just add a few more preservatives, right? I mean, yeah. What else? I don't even know what they have in it now, but it's, if you overcook them, they last longer. Maybe you just need to be the extra crispy. People are very happy.
Yeah.
but no, back to your point though, I think you make a fantastic point actually. And I'll use my lovely wife as our test case here. I remember telling her about David and Tavala and being like, this is our food. This is what we like. This is what I do. He gave me a free oven, so I'm on. And then I kept trying to lobby to get it in her house because I have it in her office. And she was like, there's no effing way. That we're going to have she doesn't sound like that, sorry, Jen. we're having this like another microwave oven on the thing, which actually goes to your guys' advantage, clearly is the non-hardware necessary piece. But eventually I convinced her, mostly because David gave me another free oven. And so we started using them at home, and she was like, nah, I don't want to do this again, sorry, Jen. And then she tried it. And next thing you know, we now have 4 boxes delivered every single week to the house. I have 4 boxes or 3 boxes delivered to the office, and we're in it. And that little piece, I think, only happened because she got used to the Grubhub case. Well, then fast forward, and now we go to Mariano's, now the namesake, and Mariano's has the click-in. And so you can go out and, like, you don't even have to go in to get your groceries. And with the exception of a few screw-ups, they're pretty good. Yep. And so that was something that was absolutely not a possibility. And now I don't remember the last time she and I went into the store. Mm-hmm. It's been a year. Yeah. And even my mom, who's like, there's no way, is like, oh man, this is pretty nice. They just pick up the food and they just drop it off. And I was like, that is why we do Tavala's, why we do Home Chef, why we do Factor and all these others that have entered the market, because the groundwork, to your point, was very well laid.
Yeah. No, I think that we're the same way. We rarely go to a grocery store, and it did take some convincing of my wife as well. But once we got that kind of weekly cadence of getting those grocery delivered and not go to the store, it was like, look how much time we're saving. But that convenience thing is a key, I think, to all of this. And that's really, I think, what's been normalized is whether it's you want to get that food, hot and ready to eat on demand, or the planning for the week. Because now with Home Chef, with Tavala, you come home and you get a home-cooked meal, but you really don't have to think about it. You pull it out of the fridge and you do the thing and you eat it, so, as opposed to, I don't know, what do we have in our cabinet, what's left?
Yeah, and there's also, like, I've talked to companies who have kind of sensor base Tupperware that essentially, I think it's called Avi, that essentially make it to where like you put all your food in the storage and it lets you know like freshness, right? I think you have to be like very OCD or like anal retentive for that to be a thing that like you're willing to follow. For me, I all of my weight gain has to do with snacking, chips, and drinking. My diet has never been better. It's never been more balanced. Mm-hmm. I've never, and that's partially because of Tavala, because I know what it is. And it just happens that I like salmon a lot. So like the salmon meals that they have are good enough that to me, I don't even have to have variety and it just works. What I love about Home Chef, as opposed to many of the other ones, and there's, like I said, I've had Factor 75 on, I've had other groups that are in your space, but I don't say they compete with you in any way, actually, like they may think they do, but they don't actually in volume. Those companies, where they lose me, and I think they lose a lot of the average person, is I'm as committed as I think or say I am when it comes to like the diet I want. I'm in CrossFit, I'm in whatever. And so you're willing to pair your high protein diets for a while, but then you get married and you have kids and variety becomes a thing and like not wanting to eat the same thing every day. And then there becomes like, all right, well, it's frozen. So like, I'm not going to be going to the office in time. So like, does that work? Where does it get delivered? And there's all these little problems that pop up for them where they've got a niche, but they can't serve the whole.
Yeah.
Home Chef can serve the whole. Mm-hmm. And that's the part that I think is really interesting is that you guys, I mean, I walk through the aisle at Mariano's, and if anyone is wondering if Home Chef is legit or not, you can just, if you've experienced Mariano's pre-Home Chef, it was not an organized product at the time. You guys brought an experience and a supply chain and a system. And more importantly, which we're going to get into is the tech, is like how to make sure you get the right food for the right people and can bring up stuff. It is leaps and bounds ahead of what I think is an industry that's still really early.
Yeah. Yeah. The bringing it all together in a kit was what we would call it, but just the convenience of the actual grocery shopping.
Yeah.
So it's all together, and sure, all these ingredients are around the store, but packaged together, the portion size is great. You know it's healthy, and you know it's quality, which is something that we pride ourselves on and make sure that we focus on. That's what we hope, is that you know that it's really convenient and it sort of cuts to the time that you have, like you said, with kids, whatever it is. But you know it's going to be a good meal, and it's still
kind of that whole meals. Meal. That's the other part of this. That like, it's not something where you eat and then you're hungry 15 minutes later. It's the same as a whole meal, except for I'm an awful cook. I don't know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't even know what to shop for if you told me to make something. I could Google it and I'd still be lost.
Yeah.
And Jen would remind me of that repeatedly. So the idea that I could just go and get it or have it shipped to my house and not even have to assemble it that saves me. So if I had it delivered and it's assembled, I've saved time on both the front and the back of this, which I think is super novel. The part I think that specifically you bring to the table, which makes this whole machine run, is the tech. It's how do you logistically make this happen? How do you make sure the food is you know, from farm to table, or it's where it came from, and how old and how new, and you know what people are ordering versus not, and controlling waste, and there's a lot of stuff, and you've built a pretty robust mechanism to do that.
Yeah, you know what's interesting about our technology is we have what you would see, homechef.com, our app, whatever it may be. About 2/3 of our tech team is dedicated to the things you were talking about. So the how do we know the whether it's the data to get to the right meals for the right customers, primarily data, surfacing data for our staff and our culinary team and our product development teams and our operations teams. And then in that operation space, in the warehouse technology is a big piece. And we focus a lot on that, enabling our operations staff to get that out the door safely too. Yep. Food safety, a big part. But we, you know, we're different. Our warehouses, we have three across the country, are a little bit different than an Amazon warehouse, a pick and pack warehouse. So food comes in and out the door generally within 5 days. So we don't hold a lot of inventory, very try to minimize food waste.
Yep.
Which we do a good job of.
Which also speaks to how well you know your customers.
Yeah, right.
Because, I mean, that's like the conversation we had, and I'm sure you've met or know Luke Saunders from Farmer's Fridge, if you haven't. You know, Luke's basically, his whole thing is win or go home on how well he predicts who and what and how long it's going to take to empty a box.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, that's everything. The rest of it is, you know, not easy, but.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's you know, we focus about 2/3 of our time and energy on tech, on that piece of the business. And of course, we want great experiences for our customers as well, make it convenient. But making sure we minimize errors, get them the right food, quality, still quality, packaged well, portioned right, all that.
What are some of the interesting observations you've made about people's eating habits or types of foods and things? Because I feel like you have to have access to, you know, I've referenced this several times, but there's a McDonald's study that they paid a fortune for to try to capture more millennial dollars. And they said, like, what do you want to eat? And the millennials all replied back like, oh, you know, we want kale and avocado toast, or whatever they say.
Yeah.
And of course, none of them bought it.
Yeah.
They only bought, you know, fries and stuff. And so they lost just a ton of money on it. But you actually get to see behavioral renewals, what they asked for, what they ordered.
I think we have some of the same insights from our data, which is kind of funny. But yeah, one of the big things that I've learned is people are pretty finicky with their food choices. And that's fine. I am too, you know. But yeah, what they say they want to eat in terms of diet is different than what they choose. You know, we have... You know, you go through and you can actually set some taste preferences on our site, which will recommend different meals for you based on that. Pretty consistently see people moving those meals around and back. So, you know, I think it's kind of funny to think about that. You know, people, you kind of laugh and like people, you know, like they say they want one.
Human beings are very vexing creatures.
But at the same time, like food's very personal, social, sometimes emotional for people. So day to day, what you're going to eat for dinner, but week to week planning. So I totally get it, you know, I think that's fine. But what that has told us is, you know, should we build like a Netflix style, like really intense recommendation engine that believes that we know what you're going to want to eat tomorrow night or next week? That'd be kind of a heavy lift. It might be a fun project.
Yeah.
But I think the data has just shown us over and over that it's not as enticing to customers. They just want choice. They want to be able to choose. And we've really targeted that as our main, as one of our main things is giving the customer choice, give them options to choose from, because choosing your food next week, tomorrow night.
I totally agree with you. I think it's interesting you use the Netflix example, because I actually think this is one of the things that they and Amazon, but Amazon's having its own content problems, are sort of struggling with right now is, you know, Steve Jobs, as crazy as he was absolutely dead on when he talks about decision fatigue and like the option of one. Mm-hmm. Like, I gave you the choices of one.
Yeah.
Like, I gave you two other choices, but I knew that they weren't the choice you'd want. So I gave you two, but it was really one. I see that every day. And I mean, even with the food that we order, like when I go to the store, I'm hungry when I go to the store or whatever it is, I buy anything. And by the end of the week, I come home and I just don't want that. Like, that's not appealing to me today. And you guys have this really difficult challenge of like, people have to order ahead and have it be there, and they have to want it when it's there. And unless you come up with different meals that sort of, I talk about this with almost every company, there's this like rule of 70 that I've kind of come up with, that like, if you don't hit on 70% of the people's wants pretty cleanly, you run up into like the skew problems. You start getting into these weird, you know, rabbit holes, because 70% of your customers need to want one of these three things every single day. And if they don't, you're going to have a ton of problems with waste and people not spending and not resubscribing because they just not eating it. What you guys, I think, do really well with this, and this comes back to the tech and the data and reading from it, is I don't want to give somebody, I don't know what the actual number is personally, but like I'll just use like when I scroll on Taboola to pick out stuff. I haven't yet. If he listens, then he'll get it. I almost emailed David a couple weeks ago and was like, I love the salads and the Beyond Meat thing, but I think you're like two or three meals too much that you have on the roll. Because like after I scroll three times, the worst thing that can happen, there's two bad things that can happen. The first bad thing is that they don't like any of the meals. That's no good. You're out of business. The other bad thing that can happen, I think, is that they feel like guilt that they didn't pick, they didn't get to pick one because they only were buying three, but like, I want that. And like, that's not a good, you don't want consumers to have that. I think Netflix is dealing with that right now. Too many things are on there. The apps that are doing well, like obviously seeing like previews of Disney, is the idea of like feeding you three movies today that would be great for you.
Yeah.
And then of course you can access all the other ones, but like, just feed me three.
Yeah.
And that's something I think you guys clearly have done well.
Yeah, we focus on that from a customer experience standpoint, just like what you said. What is it, what is the feeling of actually choosing? But also on a complexity standpoint. So if we were to, let's say, double our menu, you know, that's a lot of complexity we're adding. We need to make sure that that is adding value and not just adding more options because it seems like a good thing.
And like if you can mix and match, I mean, for you guys, I'm sure there's a lot of crossover where like different, completely different meals, but like same ingredients. And so we're buying in bulk, we're capturing economy of scale. Where that becomes a problem is if you have like diverse meals and economy of scale, it becomes like if you have the user base, great. But if you don't, problematic.
Yep.
And I think that is, I mean, it had to be one of the attractions from Mariano's, right? I mean, that they, the Kroger, I guess, but like that they were looking at this, like these people could actually like, yeah, more business, more money. Great. But they can learn a ton about how to position the food and product that are in the stores.
Yeah.
Like the experience that they create in the stores is just as applicable as the information that you have for an app. It's all relative.
Yeah. And whether it's millennials or just new generations, their customers in store shopping habits are different. And then they're going online and either getting pickup or delivery, and going to the store. But you're right. So evolving the in-store experience is just as much a part of it. So, we felt like there was great alignment in that. So they have years of rich history and behavior in store, and whether it's the path that customers walk, whatever. We had a couple years worth of you know, habits and data in terms of how customers choose online for meals, and so you know, we complement each other in that way, and I think are able to use so. It's a great deal for us. So we get this footprint of stores and we're rolling out our products in store this year. But they have viewed us as a great partner in terms of learning, in terms of e-commerce or digital traffic.
Continue to do delivery, it just works even better. I mean, it's very synced up. The other thing, I don't know if you guys actually do this as a part of your business, but it happened to me. And so I thought could be an interesting business. Someone gifted me a couple week subscription to, or like I guess an order of Home Chef.
I
didn't even realize that was a thing.
We have gift cards. And
I don't mean the gift card, they literally ordered me.
Oh, I see.
Like they like had it sent to my house when we said that we had a new baby on the way and the baby was born. Somebody had bought that and actually had it sent out to us.
I've heard a few stories like that. That's interesting. So I think you're I had a baby about 8 months ago, and same thing. it's been great. same thing though. It is such a good use case, and I can with my friends or out in the community take off my Home Chef hat and say it's actually really good for new parents because it takes all that pressure off, but you get to have a home cooked meal. But gifting it to someone as a, like just getting it sent to their place. Great move.
I honestly, as soon as I saw that, I talked to a couple buddies and was like, that it should be a corporate, like, if not corporate, but like, it should be a gifting business line there. It's like, you just pick out 1 week, like, you just, and you could create based on what you know, like, here's a, you know, typical package, family package, and they get it and it comes free to these people. And then from there, they can just re sign up for them. But like, I don't know.
That's great. I'm going to have to write that one down.
I'll tell you who it is so you can get them a referral for you or something.
Great.
So now I want to learn more about you personally. As a technologist, I'm going to assume that you weren't in the home and food and produce background, what's your story?
I have worked in all sorts of industries, but not food or even necessarily e-commerce up until Home Chef. I think that's what is really great about being a tech professional. You can sort of pick and choose industry if you'd like or product. And I had previously, prior to Home Chef, I was a technical co-founder at a company called Snapsheet, which is
Brett.
So as auto,
I didn't know that. That's not in my notes. I don't think is it? It's somewhere in there. Anyway.
Yeah. So I was there for about 4 years. Auto insurance industry claims.
Yep.
It was great. Built a mobile SaaS platform, but you know. For me, it was what I wanted to do next was definitely more in the consumer market and e-commerce. Got connected to Pat, and it just made sense. So that's kind of I didn't necessarily say, hey, let's do this food and grocery thing, but did get connected to Pat, and I think through a few conversations realized that there's a real product here. Pat's great.
You yep.
mentioned him, had him on, and it seems like customers are really into this thing, you know, is kind of what I was thinking. So that was put those things together. That was the exciting part.
So let me ask you this. So this is, you know, 5 years ago. So this is like at that point where we were talking about at the beginning of the show where mm-hmm. people are just sort of warming up to the idea of somebody even delivering their food, like of any sort. And so obviously Grubhub had been around since before that, but it was still very like urban. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to guess that, like, as a technology person, I'm sure you look at the world through a lens that sort of sees where you could use tech to change everything, mm-hmm. Which opens up doors for, you know, venture opportunities and things like that. But in general, what was the conversation like both sides? Like, Pat telling you, we need a CTO, we need a real player, I want to make this and this and this become a reality, and you looking at it like, sure, Pat, that sounds great, I can build it, but in my estimation and knowing what I now know about what you're trying to accomplish, I think you could do this and this. Like, I would love to know the conversation pieces that were like, you know, you've got a good thing. I mean, obviously, it's still a while. It's been a lot even bigger since you left Snap. Yeah. But there had to be a moment there where you're sort of like, okay, there's something here.
Yeah, you know, I ended up consulting a little bit with yep. them. So it didn't happen with one or two conversations. Yeah. So
Did he know right away what he needed, or was it one of those situations where it's like, I mean, I know where I want to go, so I know that I'm going to need a CTO. That's not a question, but what I want.
Yeah, it was more of that. So he said, here's where we are. Like I said, I would consider us at the end of the MVP stage. So we talked about the product market fit. Blue Apron was out at the time, yeah. and we were a follower on that. And we just kind of talked about the industry and, you know, some high level vision of what he was thinking. And so I was, you know, trying to figure out what I wanted to do next. I think, you know, to be candid, I thought it was great and decided I just thought I could help. So the technology they had, and I was just doing a lot of coding. But I knew that I personally...
Are you still heavy on the keyboard?
No.
Yeah.
No. So I knew what I wanted to do, having been in startups, was be early in a startup. I loved building. I love still building.
Yep.
And I loved the idea of getting a chance to build a team around me and a company.
Yep.
And so that was kind of what I was looking for. So the first part was there, the opportunity to build. I knew that I could help him out. And so he kind of said, you know, we expect to keep growing and we'll have to grow out a tech team. And so just so you know, that's kind of what we're going to need. And it was sort of like, yeah, okay. You know? So I set off to kind of help them build out, take it from MVP to 1.0. And what happened during is about a little over 2 months during that time was got to know a lot of the people on the team. Again, 10 or 15 people.
Yep.
We were in the West Loop and our warehouse was down below. So our office space and you know, card tables. So we're all sitting around the same. So fun startup days.
See, I would say the food tech was the original startup. It really is. Because like, if you think of like the sexy stories of like, oh, I went in this crappy little office, no windows. If you talk to, like, I had not food tech, clothing, e-commerce tech, but like Monica and Andy, I had Monica Royer here, and she's like, you know, our office was just like the storage room in our first store. And then like, we built a technology platform on top of it. All the food players are basically like, they're at whatever place can be a co-kitchen or whatever they need.
Yeah.
They can't afford to have two.
Yeah, they were cooking right behind us.
They start right there, which means you know your product better than anyone.
Yeah.
Versus like a lot of people who start with an office and they've got businesses all separate. Yeah. They don't really know, in your case, how the sausage is made, like literally.
Yeah.
And that's a huge advantage.
Yeah, one of my favorite memories is, you know, they would get smoky in there from cooking or something, and we'd have to leave, go to early lunch and let it clear out or something. Just fun. But yeah, so what happened during those first few months, just again, kind of saw that customers really love the product.
Yeah.
Got to know some more of the team. And in my own world, I was about to get married, so we were planning a wedding, and it literally just hit me one day, because I knew, like I said, what I was looking for, just a chance to build and build a team and a company. And it was just one of those things where got a chance to work with him for a little bit on doing just one thing, and then one day was like, wait, oh, this is kind of what I was looking for.
Yeah.
You know, Pat had gotten to know me too, so we went to lunch and we talked about it and had a few more conversations and decided to do full time soon after that. Started hiring people, and the rest is history.
I got two, and it's a good history. I got two, and it's not even over yet, which is the cool part. Mm-hmm. I've got two questions for you. One, kind of more on the personal part of, like, as an individual taking this on once you join the team, and sort of one, selling Pat, because I'm a person who, you know, I've founded a business. I run Technori, obviously. We just today announced that we're launching this big tech initiative where we're handling a lot of managed offshore and just trying to get more involved other than just sprinkling cash and making intros. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine all the companies that come through. I find it very difficult sometimes to turn my head away from when I see someone come through. I'm like, I would love to jump on that team. I don't even care what the title is. Mm-hmm. I just want to go on that team because I know I could help build it. But a lot of times the founder, especially even if it's consulting and you knew him, the founder is rigid because they're protecting their stuff. They're defensive because they've got their equity and there's like kind of things that you have to deal with. How do you sell him on, or did you even have to sell him on this concept that not only am I a good fit to be your CTO and help you run the tech, but I'm a good strategic partner to help you build this company. How do you walk into that meeting and know, for all the CTOs out there or would-be CTOs out there, how do they convince the founder in that meeting that I'm the guy?
Yeah.
No pressure.
So first of all, we talked about from day one that was kind of what I wanted to do.
Sure.
Still wanted to code and wanted to build a team. I had experience building a small team prior to that. And we talked about that. But beyond that, I think it's, it's a partnership. And so whatever the CEO or the founder brings to the table, you want to be a good complement to that. So I think, real quick on Pat. So he taught himself to code enough to build the first, MVP of Home Chef. So I think that's really important to the story because he
knows the value.
Yeah. He knows the value. Pat's, I love working with Pat. And from day one, he said things like, I built the original version of this, but I need to fire myself and get someone who can take it from here.
Yep.
So, from his perspective or from a CEO or founder perspective, I think that self-awareness is critical. And now that
this is you selling yourself on Pat as much as it's selling you to him.
Yeah. So I think it's both ways.
Yep.
And I think it should be complimentary. And it should, I think your values have to be there, sharing the same values. How are we going to build this team? If we're going to do it, Do we agree that we should do as fast as possible, or is it more of a slow pace?
Yep.
What's the vision here? One thing, Pat and I have a mutual acquaintance that was introduced us. So whether it's that or getting some references, talk to some folks you've worked with in the past, it's as a co-founder or your first couple of hires, especially if they intend to be leaders, just critical to find someone who is going to share those values with you and that you feel like you can have arguments with and healthy conflict with, because you're going to,
I think it's so interesting and different to me. I talked to, you probably know him from the insurance days, Kin Insurance, Sean Harper. I don't know if you know Sean, but he's part of that whole light bank clique of companies that are in the insurance space.
Yep.
Sean is one of those guys who stands out in a room no matter what. He tells you how it is, and he's up front, and he doesn't bullshit you around at all about like how you fit in with him, and that's good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like in this business, in the tech industry, and in the startup industry in particular, unlike almost any other industry where you go in and try to sell yourself and put up this like veil, it's like going on a first date. You get the best version of me all 45 minutes, and then it all comes apart. You are, especially if you're more looking at leadership, you are better off being honest and upfront and hold your values firm and just let the marbles fall where they fall than ever going in and jumping on a ship. Because the one thing I've learned about tech companies in general, but startups even more so, or growth companies, there's too much conflict, there's too much fast pace and things breaking, mm-hmm. that if you were full of it when you signed on, you're going to be found out real fast. Yep. And it's a bad situation for everybody.
It's bad. Yeah.
So that I think it's really interesting for you to actually like reaffirm that without even saying it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And one key learning as I look back, and like you said, our journey's not over, so it's exciting, but from here backwards, that is one of the things that stands out the most. So rapid growth over the last 5 years. Last year we were number three on the Inc. 5000 yep. List, which is kind of revenue growth over 3 years.
Which is insane, by the way.
60,000% revenue growth. But so the thing that happens with that is just, you know, constant change. And yeah. just like you said, if you're full of it when you start, this is going to create bad. So one of the key learnings that I've had is the people that you surround yourself with are going to be the difference whether you make it through those rapid changes, rapid yep. growth, quick decisions, even the ability to say I was wrong, yep. you know, because it happens fast and you don't have a lot of time to not focus.
Yeah, no, that's a very well said. My final question I've got for you on this whole thing is I liken things in sports a lot because I think of like baseball. When I'm starting anything, you need to have like that pivot foot to drive the energy to get off the ground and get mm-hmm. get going. When you take this job on, I'm assuming that there was something other than the vision of this build and this long-term thing. There had to be one thing, or maybe there didn't, be one thing that you were like, as soon as I sign on with you, the first thing that's going is this. What was that first thing you were like, you know what? I don't care what we do after this, but this is the first thing I'm doing.
I wouldn't say anything. I was like ready to get rid of something.
But I don't mean get rid of, but just like in general, you're like, I know a customer or a person or a competitor or another business or whatever it is that has this element that I think drives them to succeed. And I'm instilling this right now. Like that's what we're doing.
Yeah. I would say nothing from an external force. It was all internal. So okay. we had, as you do, when it's just a few people, pretty haphazard approach to yep. what we do. So, once we agree that, you know, let's do this and we need to start building a team soon, I started instilling process. Yep. So lightweight process. So from a tech perspective, we were, don't want to get too technical, we were pushing straight to master, which means that we were just coding and pushing it straight there. No, yep. very little review. So we instituted some lightweight review.
Testing is good usually.
Automated testing, yeah. that kind of thing. So things that we would need, these are foundational building blocks. The technical building blocks, but then the people and process.
Putting a process and infrastructure in right. place so that you could go fast.
Well, our first planning meeting was instead of like, hey, who has a loudest request? One of the first thing was, let's get around a whiteboard and we'll keep the top 10 list.
Yep.
Now we have eight or nine groups with their own boards and yeah. use, you know, agile boards and that kind of thing. But at the time it was four people and it's just like, hey, we're going to get these four people, five people together and we're going to decide this week on Monday morning. We're going to take 15 minutes and we're going to write with a marker. And that was it. Yeah. And so just kind of setting those initial foundational blocks.
Very cool. This is super interesting. It's a great story. Great story for Chicago. Great story for you guys, you and Pat. A story that's not done and still growing. And there's so much, like I said at the beginning of the show, there's so much growth potential in this space still because, I mean, for people who look like me and you, it's like, oh, yeah, Home Chef. Why would I not? Everybody else that's out there is still like, what's this?
Yeah.
There's got to be 60, 70% of the general market yep. that's just not even like they don't even know who you are, not even touch the idea. So super exciting. I hope you guys come back on, you know, regularly and keep us up to the speed with yeah. this. Where do people go, of course, to download the app and to sign up for Home Chef?
Yeah, homechef.com. We're in the App Store. Search for Home Chef. You can go Chicagoland, Mariano's. Check out, get one or two meals.
Or send one to a friend.
Send them to a friend. Kroger stores nationwide. So we're in over 1,000 stores now. We'll be in over 2,000 stores nationwide wow. By the end of this year.
Very
so,
cool. Awesome.
Big footprint.
Well, Matt, I appreciate you taking the time and coming in. Thank you
Thanks
so much.
Thanks for having me.
Enjoy of course. To learn more about upcoming investment opportunities, check out the blog at technori.com. Download the podcast on Spotify. Follow us on social @technori. You can follow me @Katoon. Boom. That's a wrap.